Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to attorney Roy Gardner, author of the new book, Lawyers, Swamps, and Money. Stick around. I'm hiding in Honduras, and I'm a desperate man. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 700 celebrity and pop culture interviews for your listening pleasure. The show is brought to you today by Audible. Audible is offering Mr. Media listeners a free audiobook download and a 14-day trial offer to give you a chance to check out their very cool service. I love listening to books on tape. If you've never tried it before, actors or sometimes the authors themselves read to you. It's great for the commute, the beach, or even unwinding before bed. You can choose a free audiobook from Audible's enormous library of titles, including today's top legal bestsellers, such as The Fifth Witness by Michael Connelly, Theodore Boone, Kid Lawyer by John Grisham, or even Letters to a Young Lawyer by Alan M. Dershowitz. You could also download The Profiler, written by famed criminal profiler Pat Brown, and yours truly, which Pat will read to you personally. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience that includes William Jennings Bryant, Clarence Darrow, and my good friend Alec Holland in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. I would love to play stupid and say I don't know the first thing about wetlands law. However, I learned just enough in my years of real estate reporting in Florida to be dangerous. So I may still play the part of Watson to my good friend Roy Gardner's Holmes as we investigate the case law presented in his provocative new book, Lawyers, Swamps, and Money. Although ostensibly a book that Roy will use in teaching classes in his role as professor at Stetson University's College of Law here in Gulfport, Florida, I imagine it will be a must-have resource for wetlands mitigation attorneys in the United States and beyond, as well as a handy cheat sheet for environmental reporters, I should say. For those of you who've spent a lifetime hearing the term wetlands but still don't know what it means, we'll start by asking Roy to explain the term in simple English and go from there. And considering that Chapter 1 in his book alone includes references to everything from The Hound of the Baskervilles and Monty Python and the Holy Grail to Swamp Thing and The X-Files, I think my friend Roy is the right man for the job here. And yes, I said friend. We first met almost a decade ago when our daughters played t-ball together, and our families remain close today, especially with Roy and Mary's daughter Maggie and our daughter Rachel being the best of friends. And with that, Roy Gardner, welcome to Mr. Media.
Oh, thanks so much, Bob. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you, my friend. And Roy, I don't want to give away your book's the twist ending, but is it safe to say not everyone lives?
It is a shocker at the end. Yeah.
All right. Now, I promised to have you explain wetlands for people who really don't get that. So let's start there. What is the legal definition of wetlands? What are we talking about?
Well, actually, the legal definition and the scientific definition don't always merge together. But generally, when we're talking about wetlands, we're talking about swamps, bogs, marshes, and similar areas. Typically, they're transitional areas between open water and what we may call uplands or fast lands.
Are there wetlands everywhere, or just, I mean, we're in Florida, we think of Florida, I think of Louisiana, but I mean, are there wetlands pretty much anywhere we go?
You can find wetlands in every state and every country. Even areas that may be considered a desert due to the lack of rainfall will have wetlands. The Alaskan tundra, for example, is much of it is technically a desert due to the lack of precipitation, but it thaws out during the summer and can also be classified as a wetland.
Is it a better question to ask what is not a wetland?
No. I think we should stick with what is a wetland.
Okay, all right. And then just to be clear going forward, what is wetlands mitigation? What is that about? People hear about that in the newspapers all the time, but probably don't know really what it is.
Right. Well, frequently, wetlands are privately owned. And if someone wants to fill in a wetland to build a house, a shopping center, a golf course, they need to get permission from the federal government, specifically from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And typically, as a condition of the permit to fill in the wetland, to destroy it, the Corps will say to the developer that you need to mitigate, you need to offset that wetland impact by restoring wetland somewhere else. So wetland mitigation refers to the wetland offset or restoration activity that is taking place somewhere else.
So, and where we run into the big issue politically, I guess, a lot with developers, is they have that private property that is wetlands, and they want to develop on it. But they really, if it is wetlands, if it's been defined as wetlands, they don't automatically have the right to develop it. They've got to go through usually a pretty lengthy process, right?
That's right. And typically they need to get permission from the federal government, the state government, and usually local government as well. And it can be an interesting area to study because there is so much tension when it comes to trying to not infringe on private property rights yet protect the environment at the same time.
Now, as someone who's teaching this and has now written the book, are you approaching this from any particular political point of view, or someone else might be able to answer that more directly than you could, but do you have a point of view in terms of leaning to the liberal side of the environmental law or the conservative side, or are you just there teaching it as straightforwardly as you can do?
Well, in the classroom, I tend to take more of a balanced approach, and that probably is accurate to describe my political leanings as well. I'm more of a pragmatist. So on the one hand, I think that there is definitely a role to regulate private property and to regulate what happens to these areas that the public depends on, because they provide so many benefits to the public from flood production, from flood protection, to our seafood industry depends on healthy wetlands. So there's a role for government to protect it. On the other hand, I think there's also a role for the private sector, especially with respect to wetland mitigation.
So that would be the pragmatism of it. You recognize that it's going to be land is going to be developed. Things are going to happen. And go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, because it is frequently these wetlands do appear on private property, they are going to be developed. The next question is, okay, if we're going to permit people to fill in some wetlands, what do we require of them? And that's where actually I think the role of entrepreneurial wetland mitigation bankers can come into play.
Now, the last 20 years, Florida has been, I think, at the forefront of a lot of wetlands law, a lot of environmental law, and there have been a lot of things put into place to try to contain wetlands destruction and devastation. But in the last 6 months, it seems like a lot of the laws are being overturned, a lot of the regulations are being thrown out. I'm sure if I was an environmental lawyer, I don't know about a professor, but if I was an active environmental lawyer right now, it'd probably be, you know, great times are here again, because these guys are, and men and women are going to be very, very busy arguing on both sides of the law for some time to come now.
Well, we have seen a significant rollback in environmental protection at the state level. Not so much at the federal level, and indeed, just in the past few weeks, the federal government, the Corps of Engineers, and the EPA have come out with a proposed policy that would actually expand the areas under jurisdiction and under the Clean Water Act.
Is your feeling that these regulations have become too strenuous in a place like Florida, or were they just about right where they were?
I don't think they were being enforced very strictly. If you take a look at how many permits are actually denied, it's very, very few, very few. And really, what does Florida offer? Florida offers its nature, its environment. That's why people come down here. And so at some point, we need to actually deny some of these wetland permits, and largely we haven't been. But now we see the legislature has at least at the state level, tried to roll back limits on development at a time when our housing vacancies are rather high, shall we say. It's a good time to buy in Florida,
yeah,
if you're looking. So I'm not sure it's necessary to remove these environmental regulations to encourage more growth when we have so many homes on the market right now.
Well, and that's the thing that I think puzzles even people who are kind of pro-business. There doesn't seem to be a lot of call at the moment for more development. It seems like, you know, as residents of the state, that the state's kind of drowning in unoccupied buildings, whether they be commercial, industrial, residential, you name it. So there didn't really seem to be a big demand for relaxing laws or regulations that weren't being used anyway.
No, but I suppose that that if you're an industry group, you're always looking for the future. And so if you see an opportunity now where you can roll back the rules to make it easier. The book talks in some respect about how laws are developed in Congress or in the legislature, but it also focuses quite a bit on what happens after that and how you influence agencies, because that's where a lot of the law is actually made, through agency regulations.
And the book does kind of explain how the agencies work. I know there's early on you show what the hierarchy of the agencies is and who makes laws and who's in charge of making decisions and how all that works. It's a real good primer for understanding all that. I want to talk to you when we come back a little bit about the teaching part of it and the students, but I did want to ask you before we take a break, reading the book, and folks, the book is Lawyers, Swamps, and Money, great title. Warren Zevon would probably appreciate it if he were still around. But I get the sense that there must be probably a lot of frustrated environmental lawyers out there that even when they win one, it's never clear cut that it's in the victory column, that there's the challenges go on, the people trying to undercut like a pro-environmental decision, there's always going to be efforts to undercut it, that there's maybe less so than in other types of law, it's never a clear cut victory.
No, it's never really settled, because you may win a victory in court, but then if you're on the losing side, well, then maybe you go to Congress to try to have a new law passed. For example, if you're upset about the Endangered Species Act and the gray wolf, well, go to Congress and have Congress pass a law that removes protection for that particular species, and that obviously is the right of every citizen to do. And so one of the things I try to do in the book is explain the ways that anyone who is coming at this issue can try to influence the process, whether looking at the agencies, the courts, the legislature, or even going to the media, such as Mr. Media.
Yes, just come to me. I can influence whatever you need, folks. Just bring plenty of money. Roy, let's take a quick break. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with Stetson University College of Law professor Roy Gardner, the author of the new book, Lawyers, Swamps, and Money. And we'll be right back.
Hey, did you know that you can listen to the latest Mr. Media on your phone with the Stitcher app? Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. Mr. Media is on demand and on the go with Stitcher. Download Stitcher for your phone today. Get the free download at Stitcher.com. That's Stitcher.com.
This is Patrick Fischler. I've appeared on TV shows such as Mad Men, Lost, and Weeds. I actually have a real career. So what the heck am I doing on Mr. Media Radio with Bob Andelman? Somebody get my agent on the phone right now.
Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with Stetson University law professor Roy Gardner, author of the new book, Lawyers, Swamps, and Money. Roy, how did you get interested in wetlands and environmental law in the first place?
Because I worked in the Pentagon.
Well, sure, that would be the obvious reason for me.
A natural connection.
Yeah.
I was interested in the environment when I was growing up, but I didn't actually start working on environmental issues until I was in the Pentagon. I had an Army ROTC commitment from undergrad, and the Army was kind enough to let me go to law school. And after law school, I was picked up for a job in the Army General Counsel's office, and my job was to advise the Assistant Secretary of the Army who attempts to oversee the Corps of Engineers. And so that was my hook into the environmental world, was through the Corps of Engineers, since that agency, oddly enough, has a regulatory program.
And you talk in the book a little bit about the difference between the Corps and the government and how who does what and how it all kind of fits together. Is it out of control? Does the government need to take another look at how all that works?
In terms of the Corps of Engineers, I mean, now I don't think so. I mean, historically, I think there was an issue with the Corps not understanding that it was part of the executive branch, and that it was the boss of the Corps of Engineers is actually the President of the United States, and that they did not work directly for Congress, providing pork barrel projects. I don't think there's as much of that anymore. I think there's more of a unified theme and program within the Corps of Engineers.
The Corps has been getting a lot of criticism of late. Again, as we're talking, it's a couple days ago they opened up the floodgate, so to speak, because of the Mississippi, and a lot of farmland. Tens of thousands of acres of farmland perhaps being flooded to save the cities downstream. And there's been a lot of, I was watching, MSNBC, and there was a lot of criticism, I think, of the Corps for over the years going from a very reliable part of the government that made very smart decisions and did smart construction to basically a general contractor that gives out contracts for shoddy construction and levees that break and other types of things. I don't want to get too far afield here, but a lot of that seems to be environmental related. That's why I asked you if maybe there is some need to rein in what they do or better define what they do.
Well, I think in terms of the levees and actually breaching them intentionally now, I mean, those are difficult decisions to make, I think they're doing the best they can with that. Historically, I would say that they may have been very good at water resource projects such as dams, but that wasn't particularly good for the environment. So, for example, here in Florida, the Corps of Engineers channelized and straightened out the Kissimmee River, and after we realized that that probably wasn't a very good thing to do from an environmental perspective, then the Corps of Engineers said, we're America's environmental engineers, and it had a new job to restore the Kissimmee to its original meandering.
I think there's what do they say, that the Corps had never met a body of water that it didn't want to dam up?
That's right,
yeah.
That's right.
All right. And in terms of, as a professor, what type of students are drawn to this corner of law? And I mean, in the first part, I said to you, quite honestly, it seemed like it must be a very frustrating specialization in the law, environmental, because it never seems like you get a clear victory. But so what kind of student is drawn to this?
I think idealistic students are drawn to it, students that want to do something for their community, whether locally, regionally, or nationally. It may be that they have a particular connection with nature. It's only after they get into it a little bit do they realize that environmental law is really not about animals, it's really about agencies. And so that's why they need to have to understand administrative law and how do you influence agencies, and how do you convince them to take a certain action, or what do you, how do you sue them if they take an action that you think is incorrect?
And that would be why Chapter 2, after the fun stuff, is administrative law. And I guess it's a test. You draw them in, right, with Chapter 1. I think we talked about this, all the pop culture stuff, the Swamp Thing and Monty Python and Hound of the Baskervilles, and it's all very fun, the X-Files. Chapter 2, you throw in administrative law at them in this book, and if I guess if they can survive that and if they can handle that, they're free to move on to the fun stuff again.
Exactly. So I attempt to hook them with Chapter 1, get a little serious in Chapter 2, and then more fun begins after that.
Got it. Now, you obviously, I know that you're here in Florida, you teach here in Florida. Is this kind of the nexus for all great environmental or wetlands law, or is there somewhere else that has a bigger impact nationally?
I think if you're going to be involved with wetland law, Florida's a fantastic place to be, just in terms of the amount of wetlands that we have here, but also some of the regulatory programs that we have, not only at the federal level with the Corps of Engineers, but at the state level as well. We have fairly developed rules with respect to wetland mitigation banking. And so the state is a leader in that particular industry.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm sorry. What are the major issues right now in Florida with regard to wetlands and mitigation and the whole shoot and match?
Well, I think one of the issues with respect to wetlands is simply whether the regulatory agencies, whether it's federal or state, will actually deny permits or development projects to keep wetlands from being filled in the first place. And in down economic times, if there's a project that will give jobs, even if they're temporary jobs, there is an inclination, there is pressure on the government to sort of say, well, we're not going to worry so much about the environment right now. We're going to focus more on the short term, which I think is a mistake. So that's one area that we need to keep an eye on. The second area is when the government issues a permit and allows somebody to fill in a wetland, it's usually done based on this promise that they're going to provide mitigation. They're going to offset the impact. Well, we need to keep an eye to make sure that they're actually doing that, that these restoration projects are actually taking place and providing the ecosystem services that they're supposed to be providing.
Okay. And then we talked about Florida, but I know, from knowing you, that you also do, I guess, some consulting overseas?
Well, I wouldn't describe it as consulting. It's more pro bono, but I work quite a bit with the Ramsar Convention, which is a treaty focusing on wetland conservation. So it is it's actually celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. The headquarters for the secretariat that oversees this treaty is in Switzerland, and I work quite a bit with their scientific and technical review panel. So it's a treaty that has 160 parties, including the United States.
Okay.
The U.S. is up to it under the Reagan administration, as I like to point out.
That's
so
what
wetlands protection is a bipartisan effort.
Of course it is. Of course it is. So that's the treaty that we still belong to. Okay, good to keep in mind.
Yeah.
and then you also do some teaching in Spain each year, or almost every year, or every other year.
I try to. I've been fortunate. Stetson has a summer abroad program at the University of Granada, and we have some connections there. So. So I've taught in our program there, and I've also served as a visiting professor at the University of Granada. And so I've been very fortunate to spend some time there.
All right. Finally, last question. Is it naive to think that, you know, we all drink water, we all breathe the air, and that we all should be protecting our natural resources, or am I just, you know, too much of a schoolboy in that regard?
You're very idealistic. You should come to Stetson and study environmental law.
That'd be the end of that school. Okay. Well, folks, listen. You can order Roy Gardner's new book, Lawyers, Swamps, and Money, U.S. Wetland Law, Policy, and Politics, on Amazon.com, or you can get it at a great price right now at MrMedia.com. Roy, I didn't even think to ask you this ahead. Do you have a website for the book, or you, Twitter, Facebook, any of that kind of
college
student stuff?
I'm old school right now, Bob. I don't have that. Although I will consult with Maggie, my daughter, about setting up a Facebook page and a Twitter account.
I think we need to get you some social media going. I mean, you're doing environmental law. These kids are the ones that are ruling the world now on social media. We've got to get you on there.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
All right. Well, Roy Gardner, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today. It was fun and nice to help out a friend, I hope.
Well, thanks so much. It's been a real pleasure.
My pleasure. And folks, for more original interviews with lawyers, politicians, and other swamp things, surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. If you've enjoyed today's show, you can subscribe for free to Mr. Media via email, RSS, or iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many parts of the Florida Everglades. Show your support of Mr. Media by supporting our sponsors, including Audible. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. If you've got an idea for a guest, a comment on today's show, or would like to advertise on Mr. Media, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com, mrmedia.com. You can also call our 24-hour listener line now at 1-727-498-4711, but be warned, some messages may be used on an upcoming show. You can also follow Mr. Media on Facebook, on Twitter, or our new YouTube video channel. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate you giving up a piece of your day and spending it with us. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Bye, everybody.
Hi, this is Raquel Welch. Yes, that Raquel. And I'd rather stick needles in my ears and listen to one more minute of Mr. Media Radio.